Hi, I'm Sharon Sneer. You're listening to Grief's Gift, a podcast that explores stories of loss and grief, and how and where to find within these painful times some of life's most beautiful gifts. We all have the freedom to make choices out of the losses we experience. Courageous, creative, collaborative, and conscious choices that so often become the gifts we hold most dear. So welcome to the conversations, meditations, and connections that are grief's gift. Hello, and welcome to Grief's Gift. This is Sharon Sneer, and I'm delighted to have you with me again this week. Today I have the great privilege and pleasure to introduce an old friend of mine, Jan Latter. Old meaning we've known each other for a long time, not indicating either of our ages. Jan was trained in advertising and later became a wildlife photographer, author and self-publisher. She travels all over Asia to talk to school children about endangered animals and recently was one of the three authors nominated for the Nans Donkin Award. Jan has the most fascinating story of how she became a wildlife photographer and an educator of young children, and I would like her to tell you the story. Hi, Jan.
Hi, thanks. I was publishing the Regent magazine in Hong Kong, and there was a photo essay by Carla Munn, and it was about the animals of Africa. And I was just mesmerized by the photographs, and I thought, I want to go to Africa to meet Carl with the excuse of writing a couple of captions. I was invited to his home, and I was sitting in the garden having tea, and a cheetah started walking through the garden.
Oh, my God.
And I thought, should I say something? But I didn't, because it was Carl's cheetah. And that was my first love affair with cheetahs. While I was there, writing my captions and interviewing Carl, I said I would like to see the mountain gorillas in Rwanda. This was 26 years ago, so that terrible war was just rumbling. Carl made very special arrangements for me to go with a friend, and when I came face to face with a very large silverback, that's the dominant gorilla in the pack, that moment changed my life and my career. My guide said there were only 600 mountain gorillas left in the world, and I thought, that is so sad. So when I came down the mountain, I thought, I want to make books for children so they could learn about endangered animals. I wasn't quite sure how to do that, but because Carl was a famous wildlife photographer, he was my mentor, and he told me how to tell the animal story through photographs. So that was the beginning of me being a self-publisher, and a lot of travel, a lot of adventures, and the joy of talking to children. I've talked to thousands and thousands of children in Australia and all over the world, and I was even brave enough to go and talk to children during the riots in Hong Kong. And it was an extraordinary week. Because I lived there for 28 years, I felt I could be sensible about the 10 days. I didn't go out at night. I didn't go out at the weekend. I had a reliable person take me from school to school. But when I returned to Sydney and I saw the number of books that had been bought during my school talks, it was a first. And from something bad, something wonderful was happening. Families were staying home and reading, and they were reading my books.
And indeed, it's happening again, isn't it?
Yes.
Because of COVID.
Yes.
People have been staying home and reading to their children, yeah, and reading your books.
Yeah. And my great reward is a child saying to me, I want to do what you do when I grow up.
Yes.
I want to help save the endangered animals. And that's what I live for.
And not only do you write books, but saving endangered animals requires you to adopt animals also and encourage others to do so.
Yes, I've adopted 8 baby elephants. And every time I do a school talk, I encourage the school or a division of the school to adopt an elephant. The first time I went to the David Shelbrick Elephant Orphanage, they allowed me to go out with some of the babies. And it was just such a wonderful experience. So that has been a great reward, being part of that.
And from you being inspired, you've passed on that inspiration to so many others.
Yes, and it's a wonderful project for children to be involved with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go home and they tell their parents and they encourage their parents probably to adopt an animal. Yeah.
I even did it to two friends. They'd been married before and they had everything well-travelled, and I thought, what on earth can I buy them as a wedding present? So one got an elephant and one got an orangutan.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Well, at the end of this conversation, it would be really wonderful if we can put in the website how people can do that.
Yes.
So that this can continue to inspire many other people to adopt an endangered animal. What struck me just now with your story was that out of a war came something wonderful, that people stayed home and read books to their children.
Yes.
And that's part of what Grief's Gift is about.
Yes.
That out of loss and grief, if we wait long enough, something unexpected and often wonderful emerges.
Yes.
And I know that wasn't your first time in Hong Kong. So could you tell me a little bit about your journey, which definitely had a great deal of loss and ups and downs?
I was married to an advertising man when I was in advertising. We competitive agencies, and we wanted to buy a beautiful apartment in Double Bay. And we talked to the bank manager. Basically, the bank manager said, although I owned a home and had a mortgage, and I was then sort of the wife status, and so the bank manager said, you know, if you get married, I'll give you the loan. We walked out of the meeting. Wayne said, what about next Thursday? And stupidly, I said yes.
Why stupidly?
It wasn't a good marriage, I think, when two people are working competitively in agencies. But it was wonderful. Wayne was, his agency was called Young & Wurbicom. He was asked to go to Japan and work there, which was a wonderful year, and then to Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, he announced that he really wanted to live as a gay man. And
oh, my God, what a shock.
Yes, my emotions were, like, clashing all over the place. I immediately thought, it's my fault, you know, I'm not woman enough.
Yes.
And all those sort of silly negative emotions. But eventually we went to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist was the only one in Hong Kong.
Wow.
In those years.
Yeah.
And he said to Wayne, you should go and try, you know, having sex with a man, because you haven't done that before. And to me, very frustrated wife, he said, you really need a lover. You need to feel like a woman again. So we talked about it, and I left the marriage. But at that time, I had...
So that suggestion didn't go very far.
No. But I had, when I left the marriage, I had no money, I had no job, I had no visa, and I had nowhere to live. And that was the biggest challenge I had ever faced in my life.
You'd lost
including
everything.
Including a lion chasing a wildebeest through the middle of my tent.
Yes, yes. That's another story.
Yes. But it was a time when the grief was just so intense. But I finally talked to myself and I thought, you have to get rid of all the garbage in your mind, because it's not your fault. You can't allow nature. You can't fight nature. If he
so
wants to
your
be gay,
understanding was that Wayne was always gay,
yeah,
and that the the thought of having an apartment and getting a bank loan was what, you know, provoked this.
Relationship.
Relationship, but, you know, sort of a spontaneous decision to get married.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So eventually, after many difficult months, I persuaded a company that I could do their diary, and that led to annual reports and led to me opening up my just my design business. And then I had the opportunity to pitch for the Region Hong Kong, the new Region Hong Kong's magazine, mm-hmm. which was going to go all over the world. And I pitched for it. I won it. Mm-hmm. And that was when I read Carl Mann's photographs.
Mm-hmm.
So that progressed into...
Who's Carl Mann?
He's a very famous wildlife photographer. Mm-hmm. Time magazine said he was one of the heroes one year with a lot of important names.
Mm-hmm.
But he was very involved in trying to stop the bushmeat.
Ah.
And he did a book called Consuming Nature. And on one of my trips, I used to go and play with their chimp called Muse every time I went to Africa. And on one trip, this big coffee table book arrived. And Carl didn't like it. He said, you know, I don't want to sign for that. And because he'd been so kind to me and my mentor, I said, I'll redesign the book for you for nothing. But the photographs were terrible. You know, gorillas with their hands chopped off and really, really shocking images. So, that was what the book was all about.
All about.
But Carl has been travelling all over, you know, really dangerous areas. Mm-hmm. But through Carl, I actually met Dr. Jane Goodall.
Oh, you did?
And that took me to Uganda to make a book about her very naughty chimps.
Were they?
I had an experience that was amazing. I wasn't allowed to take a big camera in. I had to just tuck a little tiny camera in under my overalls. And one chimp saw that.
Uh-oh.
And I knew the game was about to begin. But I sat on a log and I started grooming him. And finally he turned around and pretended to groom me. And as quick as a flash, unzipped, stole my camera.
He unzipped your overalls. Cheeky bugger.
But, I loved Muse so much, this ugly chimp that Carl and Kathy had. And I thanked him in the book I've been writing because he taught me so much about how to behave with primates.
Mm.
So when I was with Jane Goodall's primates, I really knew how to behave.
Can you give us some idea of what does that mean, how to behave with a primate?
Well, let me do the answer with the orangutans,
mm-hmm.
Because they're still in the same primate bracket. I was sitting on a log one day, and we were in the middle of the jungle with a platform with a lot of bananas on it. And this would help supplement the orphan orangutans that have been released into the wild. So it was wonderful, you know, watching their interreaction. One orangutan tried to fit 15 bananas into his mouth. And then suddenly there was crashing through the trees and this huge orangutan with great big cheek pads crashed down and all the orangutans disappeared. And I said to my guide, what's happening? And he said, oh, this is a very aggressive male. So I started taking his photograph. He was splendid. Aware that some tourists had sort of arrived in the area as well. And then I saw through the lens that he started to charge. The tourists screamed and ran everywhere. And I decided I had to stand perfectly still because I was too scared to move.
Wow.
And 130 kilos of barreling red hair came flying past me. And I looked around and my guide's laughing. And I said, that was not funny. Why are you laughing? And he said, look behind you. And I looked behind and there was this pretty female orangutan So he was looking at her the whole time.
Oh, my God. He thought she was looking at you, but no, another woman.
He just had mating on his mind.
Oh, my God.
So I just had to learn, you know, all the body language.
Yeah.
Mother orangutan with her baby came and I'd left a bottle of warm and cold water on the wharf. She picked up the warm bottle and she didn't want it. She picked up my very last cold bottle of water with her big hairy hand. She undid the top, the cellophane, the top.
Unbelievable.
And she drank my last cold bottle of water. But it was a very gentle engagement between the two of us.
Right.
And I think I'm always very excited and very calm. And when those two cheetahs came up to me and they allowed me to touch them, I just felt I was in love.
So tell us a little bit about that, because that's a good story.
I was with Carla Mann and we were just walking in the bush.
Mm.
And the first time I was changing my film, and when I looked up, a cheetah was walking towards me.
Whereabouts were you?
Just out of Nanuki. That's near Mount Kenya.
Uh-huh.
And I looked back and I didn't know what to do. And Carl said, just get down, be quiet. So the cheetah just flopped in the grass. And on my next trip, I said, Carl, can we try and find that cheetah again? So we walked in the same area. By then I had a different camera. And I had the cheetah purring before I saw it. I quickly gave my camera to Carl. I knelt down. The cheetah came up and allowed me to put my hand on its throat to feel the vibration of the purring in my hand. A second cheetah came up, very nervous. But that was the most magic moment of my life.
Definitely.
It was just so special. Mm. And I just have so much to thank Carl for my wonderful experiences.
Hi, this is Sharon Sneer and you're listening to Grief's Gift. If you resonate with what you're hearing, please don't forget to let your friends and family know. And if you have your own experience that you would like to share, please contact me on www.sharonsneer.com or on my email, sharon@sharonsneer.com. Thank you so much for listening, and now back to Grief's Gift. He was the catalyst.
Yes.
That shifted you from one part of your life to another.
Yes.
Because you had lost so Yes. much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what actually went on in Hong Kong? Because you say that you had organized, didn't have a visa, mm-hmm. you didn't have anywhere to live, you'd lost a husband, you'd lost your so-called status, which 26 mm-hmm. years ago in Hong Kong yeah. was obviously very important.
Yes.
So how did you, and you said that you, it was intense grief, but you shook yourself out of it. So depending on what the purpose of the yeah. grief is, what the cause is, but how did you do that? And,
well,
did it linger?
My lovely Dr. Henry Lee, my GP,
mm.
Because I felt I was very strong and I was coping, but occasionally I became a blubbering wreck and I would go in and see him.
Well, you know, that's kind of a relief to hear that.
Yes.
Because we need to grieve our loss yeah. on our own terms, in our own way.
But Henry gave me the best advice. He said, I'm not going to give you Valium.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give you a sleeping pill.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to do now is go out and have sex. That is going to heal you.
I love this guy. Okay. It does help a lot. So how did you find somebody?
Well, I had a lot of affairs I shouldn't have, and some that I should have.
Yeah.
And some are still my friends today.
Mm-hmm.
But when I established the Regent magazine, I went back to help Lintas, which was an agency I worked for in Sydney, they had a disastrous opening. So I thought, I'll just go back and help them for a short time. And I invited a lovely man called Maud, whom Wayne and I met in Paris and both fell in love with him at exactly the same moment.
Wayne being your first husband.
Second husband, actually.
Second husband.
And he was very talented. Mm-hmm. And so I suggested that Lintas hire Maud. And we worked together. We were going to work together. But when Maud arrived, in between time, we'd written lots of letters to one another. It was the years of writing letters.
Mm-hmm. I miss those years.
But when he arrived, he gave me this exquisite Art Deco brooch. And he said to me, should we avoid having an affair if we're going to work together? And I thought, he's a married man who turned gay during therapy. When Wayne and I met him, he was gay. And now he wanted to have a normal affair with me.
What do you say?
I was a bit spellbound for the moment. But it was, in a word, a disaster.
Oh.
We did fabulous creative work together.
Yes.
But one night, while I was swimming in his pool and he was with a friend at the end of the pool and I knew what they were doing, and I said, Maud, let's be friends forever.
Yes.
But we can't have sex anymore. Which saved my life because he died later on AIDS.
Oh.
So.
Oh, my God.
That was sad. But
that was moving into the 80s by then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think grief teaches us so much and makes us so strong and gives us an inner strength we had no idea we had.
Yes. Yes, and I agree.
That's from a bad thing to a good thing, you know, each time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I agree completely with that. And I think that just to take two or three steps back, speaking to a number of grief counsellors and therapists, many have said that sex does, for a short period of time, make a huge difference when you're grieving.
Yes.
It just takes you out of your head and heart and grounds you back into your body.
And I think for any woman who has had an affair or lived with or married a man who is gay or wants to be gay, you can't blame yourself.
And that's right.
When I was going through my sort of getting over everything period, I decided I would write a book called My Husband Wore Pink because he had a pink suit on for our wedding. And I didn't feel I was qualified to write it. So I was living in Hong Kong. I flew down to Sydney and I talked to a writer friend and we taped and drank lots of glasses of wine. Mm. And after many, many hours of taping, I said, Nancy, I can't do this anymore. I wanted to bring in some light, funny stories, and it was just healthy to let it all out, tuck it away, and just forget about it. I have in my mind all these drawers that I open up, I tuck everything in, I close up, and that's it. I never think about them again because I don't want that emotion to affect me.
So have you opened the drawer again, Jan?
Yes, during COVID, I decided, because a few people were saying on my Facebook, you've had so many adventures, why don't you write a book? So a lot of drawers got opened, and I started the book when I bolted school at 14, clutching a scholarship, my years through learning to be an artist, getting married the first time, my years in advertising, and then up to the moment with a turning point with the gorillas, and then all my adventures with animals after that.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent this morning, for the very first time, my first submission.
Did you really? Today?
Because it was 2 of 2 of 22.
Exactly. It is indeed.
Yeah. And I sent the next one on Friday.
That's so wonderful. Congratulations.
I'm working with a wonderful woman called Zena Shatner. She's been my editor. From the age of 14, when I was in school, my first confession in the book was hopeless at grammar and spelling. Still am.
So, yes. Zena, yes, I completely relate to that.
Zena,
all of my editors must have only half a head of hair left after reading my books and editing them. I know that you have lived a very active life since you started traveling the world. You have ridden on jeeps and gone through corrugated ground and climbed and whatever. That's not going to happen again. Or is it?
No, most probably not. I damaged my back, first of all, playing squash in the early years, but then all the trips to Africa. The last time I was following a tiger in India, the guide wasn't good. And he went down the side of an empty river bed, and my back seriously went out then. So the operation is a hideous one, and there's no guarantee it's going to work. So I have acupuncture and remedial massage to keep myself mobile. And on my last trip, I managed it with a lot of help. But I think I'll do one last trip to Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel I owe my distributor and agent there.
Mm-hmm.
She's still got a lot of books, and although we've done some Zoom talks, it's not the same as having children in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, I'll see how the book goes. Mm-hmm. I've sort of gone a full circle because I've come back to where I began with art. I've been fascinated by the calligraphy of the body since I learned plate etching in Japan and calligraphy in Hong Kong. So my challenge is to show the body in a few energetic lines. I've been trying for a couple of months and everything has been rigid and horrible and stiff. But on the very last session before the holidays, I got my line back again.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
I'm looking forward to starting again on Friday.
And I've seen some of your work, and the simplicity and the depth of feeling out of these bodies is just remarkable. I've never seen anything like it. Maybe at some point Brett Whiteley was able to do something like that, but you consistently do it, so it's just amazing.
Well, thank you. It's interesting that one of the therapy things that I was doing to myself after all the moving out and living alone and coping, I started drawing linear line then of male and female bodies. For some reason, it was my therapy to do it. And a graphic designer called Henry Steiner opened his big architectural drawers where I had all my drawings, and he said, "These are good." And he persuaded me to have an exhibition. I was too embarrassed to take the drawings to a framer. So the showing, you know, everything in the exhibition was really quite a challenge for me. But it was a great success, and 40 were sold the first night. So I thought, oh, someone out there likes them.
Yes, you're very modest. They're really quite spectacular, beautiful.
Thank you.
So you have moved from strength to strength following loss and loss.
Yes.
In fact, at one point your eyes betrayed you also.
Yes.
During that time, is there anything that you can look back, pun intended, and see what did you gain from that time?
My eyes have been affected with two things. One, a trip from Shanghai to Hong Kong, excruciating pain, and having to have some surgery immediately during Chinese New Year, which was incredible because everyone was on holidays.
And today, of course, is yesterday was Chinese New Year.
So yes.
The anniversary.
The anniversary. But the other frightening part of my vision was catching giant cell arteritis. Very unknown problem, but thankfully my GP recognised the pain I was in and got one of the very few surgeons to do a simple operation by taking an artery out of the side of the head. And I lived with the fear of going blind in 24 hours until I was on sort of the road of recovery again. But that fear was terrible.
Mm.
And you'd think of all the things that, you know, you couldn't do. And then you started thinking of all the things you might have to do. So that was pretty terrifying. And because I was so ill at the time, I just accepted what was happening and hoped for the best, really.
And has it had any, has it changed you in any way, having gone through such a traumatic time?
No. As soon as all this incredible dose of prednisone was down, I was taking 75 milligrams a day, which destroys just about everything in your body.
Yeah.
But as soon as I was healthy, my reward to myself was going to Africa.
Uh-huh.
And I just went to my favourite conservancies. I went out the first afternoon after 28 hours of travelling with my guide, and we went out onto the savannah with fresh little white flowers and green shoots. And thousands of animals just munching away on the new grass. And all my tiredness just melted away.
Mm.
And I feel totally at peace. And that's what Africa does to me. It's my home.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is indeed. Jan, thank you so much for this incredible conversation.
Well, thank
you. I feel as if we've touched so many different parts of your life. And even though I said I was so inspired by you before we began, every conversation leaves me a little more inspired and touched and appreciative that you're in my life. So thank you.
Thank you. And you're in mine.
Yes, I am indeed. Thanks, Jan.